listening to season 2 of PraroPod.
We are sisters, one West Coast,
one East Coast,
one straight mom of toddler twins,
one gay, multiply divorced,
one lifelong Agatha Christie fan,
one new reader.
Season 1 got the two of us through the first shitty year of COVID. Follow along with us for season 2 as we drink. And sometimes remember to talk about the book. Hello? Oh,
I've missed you grooving to the intro music.
Right? Right?
I can't hear the music, but I can see you grooving.
Let's stay with this. Okay.
Okay, so as we were saying in the part that we're not going to use because technical difficulties, we're back after a 4-month long bathroom.
Welcome to PraroPod.
The second half of the episode that we were recording in October, and now it's February.
4 months ago. Not quite 4 months. Almost 4 months.
So we're back to finish Crooked House.
Yeah. And we all had to remind ourselves what this book was about. It's definitely not my favorite book. I mean, it's definitely not one of the ones that I'm like, oh, I want to read again and again.
And I mean, it's troubling.
Yeah, and of course, yeah, it's troubling. It's definitely troubling. There are some creepy kids.
Yeah, and they're definitely, like, there's definitely a lot of characters in it. And definitely, I'm going to stop saying definitely.
But why? Just go on. Yes.
It reminds me a lot of Knives Out, but I should say that Knives Out reminds me of it because obviously Knives Out
this was first recently, yeah.
But like similar thing where when you're trying to suss out all the characters, there's all these family members that you're trying to figure out their motivation, and they're all quirky, and are they nice, or you know, because there's the not successful actress, and there's right. There's a lot of people that you're like, I don't exactly like you or not like you,
right? You're just kind of a
lot of characters, yeah. Which again, it reminded me of Knives Out,
right? All of the Knives Out, yeah. Except really the second Knives Out, almost everyone is horrible, but
you mean Glass Onion,
yeah.
That one was so much better than the first one. I think it's just because what's his face is gay. James Bond being openly gay was so fun.
Well, and Janelle Monáe plays two different characters with two different accents and two different personalities.
And she's so hot as both of them.
Right. Ugh.
And
Daniel Craig is so hot.
Daniel Craig. Daniel Craig is adorable and out gay. You know what I mean?
Like, right.
And like, I felt like that movie was his middle finger to his James Bond contract.
Like, that one, and then that one. Have you seen that vodka commercial where he does the dance?
Yes.
Right. It's the most gay, like, but it's yeah. I feel so like, yeah, sexy. He was like,
I'm finally out of that gay, that James Bond contract, and I don't have to
be like man, masculinity, man.
Yeah. Isn't Hugh Grant his partner in
Mass?
Yeah. Which, I just love it.
I don't know. I think Daniel Craig could do better than Hugh Grant. I don't know. I mean,
okay. Personality, but like they're both like, but like if you just think of the casting there, like the two like ladies, men, these are the men we tell women to be attracted to,
right? Yeah, Hugh Grant has been in every rom-com,
like every rom-com hero, and then James Bond himself in a relationship together. It's so
that's true. That's true. But I guess I'm still mad at Hugh Grant for the character he played in Bridget Jones. So like,
to help you process that portion. He's not his character. I mean, I don't know him as an actor, but there was news about him, you know, with questionable decisions at points. But I don't know. We don't know that. But anyways, the cat, it was just so, but just, and then Janelle Monáe is just a treasure and it's just hotness.
Both Janelle Monáe or Daniel Craig were just incredible. And both of them are incredibly attractive. Everyone else.
Honestly, I admire Daniel Craig, but he's one of those cases where I was like, well, I must be gay because I don't see it.
Oh, well, yes. See?
Yeah, I'm just like, if you just like, okay, Hugh Grant, I see it. Like,
you
I'm
see,
not,
what?
Not, I mean, he's not for me, but I see it. But Daniel Craig, I'm like, that guy? That's what you guys like? He looks like the guy who, like, works at the hardware store. I mean, the accent's cool.
What is wrong with the guy that works at the hardware store?
Nothing, but he doesn't, to me, he doesn't look like a hardware store. He just looks like Guy. He looks
oh,
like
really?
Mr. Guy.
Oh. I've always thought Daniel Craig was super hot. I thought it was hot in Knives Out. I thought it was hot in Glass Onion. I thought it was hot in the vodka commercial.
Yeah, that is a great commercial.
I thought it was so hot. Anyway, oh, Sushi thinks I'm not something to cuddle with.
The reason I liked Glass Onion so much better than Knives Out was that like there was like maybe because there was more of him, so you got to like him more because like. You know what I mean? And then Janelle Monáe, but in Glass Onion, I don't know. It was a mood that it doesn't make you want to rewatch it because you just hate everyone so much. Everyone's so terrible.
Right. Well, and I guess because this goes back to our theory about do we care if the person who was killed was a good person? Do we care if people suffer? Because in Glass Onion, the person who was killed was a good person.
Right.
But all of the suspects are bad people.
Right.
And in Knives Out is basically the story we just read. Old man, right. Quirky family, Nazi young man. Like literally there's this literally. Nazi.
I mean, yeah.
And so like, and everybody's got issues. Although the solution in Knives Out is different, but this is very much Knives Out. Old man killed, lots of money, big family, everybody's got issues.
Yeah. And then you as a detective or Daniel Craig are trying to figure out like which one of you are just terrible people and which one of you are actually murderers.
Yeah. But I feel like in Knives Out, they weren't terrible people as much as they were just rich. Which can be terrible people.
Yeah, and I think it asked the viewer to ask that question. Like, right? Like, if I'm rich and entitled and I think that my rich father or father-in-law should fund my nonsense indefinitely and I feel entitled to this, and that scene when they see that he leaves all the money to her and they all start closing in on her and, you know, like, does the desire for money or the feeling of entitlement to money make people be terrible? And the answer is yes, because look at society and capitalism.
And that happened in the story, to bring it back. Like,
thank you. You're always good at making sure we bring it back.
Bobby ate a sandwich and Sophia? Yeah, Sophia. Sophia got her hit the, how does he say his name? The grandfather's name?
It's been a minute since that was in the audiobook. Okay. Aristide. Let's go with Aristide. That feels right.
Anyway, so he left his money to Sophia, kind of similar to the patriarch leaving the money to what's her face, since it's been a minute since I've seen Knives Out. But it's very similar where he's like, yeah, you're the only one. You're the only worthy one. And
very similar.
To bring it back. I have one other thing. Oh shit! What was I going to say? oh! Entitled people.
Go! You got it.
Have I told you? I know I haven't told the audience because we've only recorded
definitely
one.
Definitely not bringing it back. We've got an intro that's bringing back to anything. You're going more off the rails. You're getting
some samples. Have I told you about my student teacher?
Yes, who's terrible.
Oh my God. It's worse. So I just, side note, I brought it back.
Yeah,
but
the last
time
that you and I had a conversation, you were like trying to counsel him into like coming into work on time and doing what he needed to be doing.
So people, I don't know if anyone listens to us, so I'm going to pretend
Portia,
people are listening.
I would like to tell you that your gestures are appreciated visually, but the clapping is not so good on the audio. So just flail without actually making the hand contact. Because the clapping after every word, I understand that as a you know, a gesture for how important it feels. But every time you make contact, when I edit this, I'm going to be like, what am I doing with that? We can't hear it.
Okay, I'll do it without people. Here's the thing.
Maybe like a punch in the air.
When you bring up your children.
I'm punching a lot now.
When you bring up your children, maybe make them have some responsibility, have some consequences. Mm. And so this young man who's 24, 23, something, he grew up in Massachusetts. He went to a private boarding school for high school in New Hampshire. Then he went to a private school for college out here. And now he is doing his student teaching out here. Same school. His resume, which I got before I started, included him.
Before he started?
Before he started with me. His jobs included helping being a TA in high school, mm-hmm. and being a dishwasher 2 years ago for 2 months at a restaurant. He's 24.
Oh my God. So he's never worked.
So when, my children's preschool starts at 8:30 in the morning. The first class at my high school starts at 8:30 in the morning. It is physically impossible for me to be in two places at the same time. And the neighbor drama they're not able to do help anymore. Whole nother thing. But anyway, but I had asked to have first prep so that I'm not teaching the class. But 2 weeks ago, it was finals week, and finals week is different than regular weeks, right? Where they change the schedule and kids come in. So I had a final at 8:30 in the morning. I again cannot be at two places at the same time. Under non-student teacher situations, I would say to a colleague, hey, I'll be there at 8:50. The kids will be finishing this. Could you watch them for 20 minutes and then go back and do your prep?
Yeah.
And usually colleagues will help because, you know, I ask twice a year, right? Like, no big deal.
Yeah.
But
lots of people have been in your situation at some point.
But I asked my student teacher. So you need to be here. And he's like, yeah, I'll be there. Great. Make sure I told my colleagues, let him in because he doesn't have keys. Be there. You're supposed to be there by 8:15. Class starts at 8:30. It's a final. Mm-hmm. So I tell my colleague who teaches next door, make sure he's can get in at 8:30. I'm in car seat land. And if you've ever been a parent in car seat land, that is like, sit down. No, sit down. I'm trying to buckle, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I get a text from my colleague teaching next door saying, your student teacher isn't here. The final has started. It's 8:30.
Oh my God.
And so my colleague has a class next door. So he's like now trying to watch my class and his class. I would have asked somebody who didn't have a class if
you knew that he was not going to show up.
So he shows up at 8:40. So he's only 10 minutes late, but he's
that's a big deal in a final.
He's the teacher, right?
Yeah, you. Yeah.
And then he didn't tell me. So I knew because my colleague texted me to say he's not here. But the kid didn't tell me that he came late and that he was covered for by this other guy.
So he was trying to get away with it.
Like, that is the most teenage chicken shit. Like,
yeah. So what did you do? Did you have to be like, so?
Yeah, I did. I did. The next Monday, I was like, so I hear you weren't there at the beginning of class and you didn't tell me you were going to be late because I could have called somebody. And then you didn't tell me when I showed up that somebody else covered for you. And he apologized, but I also had emailed his professor. Another professor emailed, so I've emailed and talked to this one professor a couple of times about his last minute turning in things, because apparently he graduated from high school and college by just vibing, you know, like, you know, like he's a very smart person. And so he's like, well, I could just,
smart and lazy.
So, but I've talked to his professor because apparently he likes to mansplain history to her, but then doesn't turn shit in, you know, which when you're in high school, you're in graduate school now. But then I got an email from a different professor this last weekend telling me that he had something due on Friday. He didn't do it. She talked to him. And he said he was going to reach out to me this weekend because it was something he was supposed to interview me about something and then write it up. And the professor was like, do not respond to him this weekend. He needs to ask you these questions and he needs to write it up. And so she was basically like, don't rescue him. And don't I was like, I'm not going to rescue him.
He's already in the doghouse.
Yeah. So he's anyway, this week alone, he contradicted me in a lecture that I was giving with a different class and was like, well, actually, in a way that I was like,
no, he didn't. Well, actually, you in the middle of your lecture.
Yeah. And anybody who knows history, what he was trying to tell me in the lecture, because it was a lecture about economic history, and Amanda may not, but Mom would be pissed about this. I was saying
she just insulted me, but it's true because I don't know a lot about economic history. So, it's fine. I know a lot about feet. It's fine.
I'm not, we all have our specialties, but he was saying, I was explaining about Marx and what Marx, Karl Marx wanted to do with the communist revolution and how it was interesting that the first communist revolution did not happen in a capitalist country. It happened in Russia, which was a feudalist country. And he tried to argue with me that Russia in the Russian Revolution was not feudalist. And I was
You're
like,
right, Amanda does not. There's no dog in this fight. I'm just like, you're saying words and you're pretty.
But then I went and talked to all my colleagues and I was like, did he just disagree with me on this point? Anyway, also in front of class, also, you know, if it's a nuanced thing where you're like, do you realize I'm trying to explain a general concept to high schoolers?
To high schoolers, right, and you want to do the nuance just to, well, actually, me just to mansplain me in the middle of my lecture.
Right, so there's a mansplaining, there's the coming late to class, there's not turning the assignments, it's not being prepared. And then, you know, he dresses like shit, right? He dresses in t-shirts, you know. And so that's a privilege thing in itself, right? Where he's like, clothes don't matter, you know, kind of thing. Where I'm like, okay. And then, you know, yesterday, he was looking at his phone and he goes, oh, my parents just visited Alexander Hamilton's birthplace. And I know you're not a Hamilton person. I'm a musical person, so I know the musicals. But if you don't know, Alexander Hamilton was born in St. Nivens in the Caribbean. So I'm thinking, oh, your parents are in the Caribbean. You're 24. So your parents are probably late 50s.
Right.
Maybe they're just on a short trip. Maybe this is when you take a trip. Maybe February is when your family takes a trip. Or maybe they winter in the Carolinas. You know, like,
yeah, there's no, a... Yeah, no, he clearly comes from money.
Because also when I realized that I literally went to the same college he did for grad school. And I had worked the year before a full-time job. And while I was in grad school, I was working as a seat server at the Blazer games, right? Like,
oh my God. And this is such a fun cultural moment. And I promise we're eventually going to talk about a book. But I want you guys to hear about Portia. So she's going to Lewis and Clark University. And Portia and I don't remember how much we've said on this podcast, but we grew up going to, I don't know what the 2024 term is, but in our day, they called it inner city high school.
Right.
And then Portia went away to Brown. And so Portia understands both sides. Like, she can sit at the table with people who went to Brown and, like, you know, have their moms who wear the polo shirts or whatever. And we went to inner city schools, and I apologize if that's not an appropriate term anymore. I don't know what they say. It was the 90s. That's what we said. That's what people said about us. Anyways, so when Portia moves back to Portland from Brown and goes to grad school, she's living at home, which was a whole other thing, because she's like, I've been on my own in the city. And then mom was like, but you're under my house and it's my rules. And I was like, I'm in high school. I'm sick of all of you guys. But Portia goes to Lewis and Clark, where everyone is this guy.
Oh my God.
And Portia was so adorable, and it made me love you so much, because Portia was like never that hood white girl in high school. But you leaned into it so hard in grad school, because you were like, I hate these girls and they're flowy skirts and their Birkenstocks, and they all think they're being
the Birkenstocks. I was about to say, like, Birkenstocks.
She had so many rants about these girls who think they're being different than the whatever the Kardashians were of that age.
They're right, like, we're being so different,
but they all dressed the same, and they all had their, like, long curly hair and their flowy skirts and their Birkenstocks. And Portia had these rants about them. So Portia's going to grad school wearing, like, jerseys and a pager and a puff coat and whatever other signs of inner cityness that she could think to flag as, like,
well, and I think it's because
that,
you know,
she was.
And the funny thing is, of course, Brown is more entitled.
Her neck at everyone at every moment.
Brown was more, like, obviously more rich and entitled and all of those things than Lewis and Clark, but Brown was way more diverse and way more urban. Lewis and Clark is literally on a hill and definitely was like, we help the little people in a way that I didn't see Brown do. And okay, so,
yeah, you were so angry that whole program. I remember you walking out of the house and, like, you were like, I'm going to exaggerate now, but it was like almost like you, like, took a sports hat and put it on backwards, like three quarters backwards, like looking like Flavor Flav walking out of the house.
No, but you gotta understand, like,
and doing it to piss them off, like doing it to be
it,
like,
didn't
I'm
work.
Doing this because it made, like, you're like, I'm just so sick of their Birkenstocks. You're like, I'm gonna wear my Jordans and my pager.
Okay. For the record, I had no Jordans. I could not afford Jordans.
No, it was definitely like,
but I had a pager and a puffy coat and a shirt. But two stories about this.
And, like, she would just be so mad. And I actually, funny, because you and I weren't that close growing up because we had 5 years apart. And I remember in this era, I was like, I like this chick. Like, I don't know what's happening here, and I'm judging a lot of the style choices. But I also really identify with this, like, counter, I hate you all so much that I want my existence to make you uncomfortable thing.
Well, here's the thing, like, this, like, we have to rescue the little people thing happened several times, including once they were like, we're going to analyze a young African-American male who struggles, and he goes, and we're going to analyze him and be like, how would we reach this kid? And they show a picture of my best friend from third and fourth grade.
Oh my God, I remember this story. I forgot this.
And they were like, we have to rescue him. And I was like, That was my best friend for most of grade school.
Did you just Google black guy Portland?
No, I mean, because then he went to Lincoln, and because he was at Lincoln when I was at Jeff, and then
the teacher got a photo of him.
Right, and so they were like,
"How did he get into your PowerPoint? And did he consent to this? Like, does he know?"
Right,
the poster but I was child like, to "How do we reach this young black man?" Ugh.
And so I was like, "He's not like a kid who needs to be rescued. He was literally because pre-puberty, you know, but before like you know, I started thinking about boys, like boys. He was my best friend. You know, like
was,
I had.
There was never any time that was before that, guys. It was always okay. It was always boys." Okay. Okay, I joke.
I'm hyper straight. We all know this. I'm hyper straight. I did, but I never was interested in Dewan that way. Like he and I just hung out, and yeah. So, but the before a certain point, then you couldn't be friends after a certain point, yeah. Puberty. But before that, he and I just hung out all the time. We had so much like, so.
So they're using and then a picture of like your friend. You're like, what the hell?
But this whole, because the whole like we have to like, rescue
did he,
him.
Did he get consented? Like, did he consent? Like again?
Probably when he was in high school and he was like, what? Okay, whatever. Yeah. You know,
picture at Lincoln when I'm the only black kid in this class, and sure, student teacher use me. As
and I hadn't seen him in years because you know we went to different high schools, and you know that happens. You grow apart, but. So that pissed me off so much because the way they talked about like, we have to help the little people. And in a way that I was like, but, you know, like, I'm not different from Dewan. Like we right. were best
I think
friends.
He's fine. I don't think he needs your help, guys. Oh, God. I'm dying. I can't even.
Right. And then the other
sitting in that room.
Right. I was so mad. And then another day, a guy I went to high school with who had gone into the army and come out. And then he and I had dated briefly in high school. He was the one who came back from the invasion of Kuwait. Yeah. And he kind of messed up. And I wrote about him. Yeah. Anyway, so he had a cousin who was trying to get away from an abusive.
Is he the one that had the Yugo?
No.
Okay, sorry. I got stuck on that.
Yeah, that was when I was a freshman. This guy was when I was a junior in high school. Okay. But he went away and fought in Iraq, in Kuwait, and then he got messed up. And we hung out when I was in college and grad school just as friends. But anyway, he was like, I need your help because my cousin's trying to get away from this abusive relationship. And she's trying to, I'm trying to help her get away. And we're worried that he's going to show up and I need to go to her apartment. So we went to her apartment and we weren't sure if the ex was going to show up and it was super tense and he had beat her up. And my friend, you know, as ex-army had a gun and he had it in his, you know, done it where it was in the small of his back, mm-hmm. you know, like because he was worried that the guy was going to show up. And it was a super tense where we're trying to convince her, like, we got to get your stuff and we got to get out. And then we ended up sitting at a freaking Denny's for a lot of the night, trying to like help her like get her life together. And it was like tense and scary and like all these things. And then the next day I'm in with the Birkenstocks and they're like, I have all the feelings and I want to chew the thing. And I'm just like, I'm tired. Right. And it was an intense night. And I was like, last night I was like worried that people were going to get shot. Because we were in this tense situation and now you guys are like, but feelings. And I'm like, okay.
Portia just, for the audience, Portia just flipped off a Birkenstock, a general Birkenstock. She flipped off a long skirted Birkenstock woman.
Well, actually the Birkenstocks was everyone. It wasn't just the women. It was everyone had Birkenstocks. There was a lot of flipping of my hands, but they were so like, yeah, we gotta do the thing. And so you're right. You know what? You're right. That's why I hate this guy. Because this student teacher, I've had a lot of student teachers and I've had flaky ones. I've had
have you had good ones from this program that you went to?
I think I have, But this guy is so...
He's the quintessential that guy that, like, that entitled white that is just, like, skating by on...
Right, you can only...
Like, he's like white privilege is the person.
He is. And he's smart, but has never worked hard on anything. And he continues to not work hard, right? And
I don't want the listeners to know this if, you know, it gets back to him one day, but, like, it sounds like he should fail this. Like, because, like, when we have students, like, sometimes we fail them. Like, sometimes we cannot, I cannot say that you're entry level, and I cannot put my license behind the fact that you should have a license.
Well, I've failed student teachers before. I have. Or I've said,
work on time is basic job skills.
When I wrote...
I've had it. Sometimes it's professionalism where it's just like, yeah, you can do the job when you get here 40 minutes late, but that's part of the job is not getting here 40 minutes late because patients are not okay with that. So, like...
Well, and when I emailed his professor, that's when I went back and looked at the resume and I was like, holy shit. Like, he's had
a job.
It's so weird to me because it's like the job that he did 2 years ago, or, you know, like a year and a half ago, was the job equivalent of the job that I did when I was 17.
Yeah, watching.
He did it.
Right. 2 months. Like, you watched this for 2 months. That means, like, your mom was like, get a fucking job to prove that.
Right, because I worked at the zoo. You know, it was, like, equivalent of that. But I did that when I was 17. And then I had a job every summer.
He clearly did need the money. That's the thing. It's like, you and I have both worked since we were eligible to work.
Right. I started when I was 17, and I've worked every summer since then. I worked every year when I was in college, and then I worked.
He clearly never felt like, what if I can't pay the rent? He just never felt that feeling.
Right. And so, like, also, when I went to this college, I stayed at my parents' house because I was a place to stay, right?
You were very smart about that. You had... Because you were paying for grad school and you didn't pay for housing. And I took have the fun conflicts between you and mom about you being like, I do what I want because I'm an adult. And she was like, you're not an adult. You're staying here.
Right. But I don't. Fun.
Good times.
So somehow he is playing for grad school and living apart from his parents, who clearly are either in Massachusetts or apparently the Caribbean.
Right. So somebody's funding all of this.
Right. So, I mean, because also, like, I had a job all through that grad school. That's when I worked, because I worked at the...
You did, yeah.
So, like, this idea that when I'm emailing...
That's the reason she's double angry, and we're going to get back to the book one day, but, like, so she's with the Birkenstocks in the daytime, and then she goes to... Her night job was being a server for the fancy seats at the Blazer games, which is, like... Right. It was for people who were being fancy-ish. Like, it wasn't the boxes, because those people actually have money, but it was, like, the medium seats, where you had basically, like, waitress service, like, table service to your seats. But because it's a stadium, people don't know people don't understand that it's a tip position, that they're supposed to tip. So people treated you like a hot dog vendor and didn't tip you, but you're getting paid
and taxed
as if you were... being tipped. And so she was just filled with so much rage. There was so much rage. lot of, like, fuck these Birkenstocks and fuck these Blazers fans. And she didn't say fuck, but that was the energy she was giving. There was
I might have said fuck the Birkenstocks. I did fuck the one people who I served them $42 worth of stuff and they gave me a quarter. I remember that one.
That's rough. Now, we've learned in Norway that tipping culture is wrong. But when you're a worker in tipping culture, and that's the only way to make money, then tipping culture is correct.
And you are taxed.
Until you change the culture. You were getting taxed as if they were tipping you 20%, but they were not.
Yeah, they didn't. It was the tax was assuming 10, not 20. Because it was 90s. So, you know, but still, they were taxing me as if I was being tipped. And I got to tell you, the math, A quarter on $42 is not 10%.
You mathed. That was live. It was live math, folks. That happened.
But
okay. We spent too much time at Lewis and Clark College.
Right. So anyway, but the reason we started this because entitled Rich People, which goes back to Glass Onion, which goes back to Knives Out.
Goes back to Portia not clapping when she talks.
Oh, God. I was trying not to. Okay. I'll say it
you
again.
You do like a exercise motion. It's very satisfying to clap when you talk. It's just not okay. Podcasting.
What about this? Does this make a noise?
No, is that satisfying?
It's not.
Just like angrily pissed. Menopause thing. Now whenever I do this, I pee. I'm not peeing. This is good. Okay. Okay. So, yes, if you found it satisfying, you're going to punch your own fist when you feel...
What I was trying to say is re-record. I was talking about... Don't laugh over it. I was trying to re-record that part.
Do you remember when we were kids and I would get these laughing fits where I just couldn't stop? That's like the closest I've gotten in a very long time to like laughing fits where I literally cannot stop.
God, that was so good. It's just funny because, of course, like my stomach is literally sore and I'm thinking, I've been doing crunches this week. Why does it hurt? Okay.
Because you're hilarious. Okay, so. I'm gonna keep it together, and now you're gonna punch your hands, and I'm not gonna laugh. Started it.
Stop it. Okay.
Editing this is gonna be a mess.
So, what I was trying to say is, I started talking about entitled people, which reminded me of my student teacher, and why entitled people. Because we were talking about Glass Onion and Knives Out, and why Knives Out, which leads to Crooked House. Haha! See,
right.
I did it.
And again, and I had brought up those movies because those movies are clearly derivative from this,
right?
Brilliant source material.
Right. So, but this story is not necessarily about entitlement, because a lot of her stories have entitlement, and this one isn't that much.
No.
So, I mean,
the solution, yeah, good question. Keep going.
So, because of course, Roger needs money. Actually, both of the sons need money, and he gives it to Sophia. So there's a little bit of entitlement.
Mm-hmm. Because basically both the sons need money, but he'd already given them money.
Right. And that's...
need more money.
And that's an interesting thing. And this goes back to my point about why I started talking about this poor young man who doesn't have any sense that he needs to show up to work or finish things on time. Is that if you've never had consequences...
Yeah. You did mention that. And I was thinking about that as it relates to like my godson.
Right.
And you know, the things I've seen with him struggle with, and I'm like, you have when the adults don't hold around you don't hold the boundaries.
Right. Boundaries. Like
they can go crazy where you just think that like the world's gonna just bend to your will.
Right. And so when you are only a little bit rich, so clearly, you know, oh, but you expect more of what you've had before, right? So these guys, my student teacher expects that things will just come easy and he doesn't have to work hard. These guys said, well, my dad gave me money once, it'll happen again.
Right.
Right. And this is why I really think that it's important for kids to understand that, other way of phrasing it, that shit happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, sometimes we don't have enough. Sometimes
this, well, yeah, and, you that, know. And that's interesting, right? Because, like, you're a parent and I'm not, but I think about that all the time, like, that struggle between, like, wanting your kid to be more comfortable than you were, but knowing that your own discomfort gave you the character that you have. Like, right. It's because that, like, our parents were busted, that, and the fact that you had to work from the point that you could work in busted ass jobs, that you have a really good work ethic because you had to.
Right.
And but you also were surrounded by friends who were much more comfortable than you.
Well, and I only had one friend that was much more comfortable than me before I went to Brown.
Right.
And then I had lots of people who were more comfortable than me, but I also knew people who weren't.
And, right. And I think that's what's the gift of our experience. I didn't mean to say you had lots. I just thought that you might have had more. But yeah, I mean, that's the gift of the experience that you and I have had, is like understanding, like, those people have much more than me and these people have much less than me. And I'm happy to be here. I'm just happy to be here.
Yeah.
But, and kind of understanding the both sides, but how do you give that gift to your children to be like, you know, like, there's no easy answer to it. Like, of course you always want your kids to have, like, you're like,
well, cause you want,
I hate taking the bus an hour across town to do that thing. But also, it was really character building for me to take the bus across town to do that thing.
Well, and like, because, and this might turn into a conflict with my husband, because we drive up and down this major street because we don't live far from a major street. And there's a bus, the one bus that goes up and down the major street. And my kids are really into numbers right now. You know that from visiting last month, that they're just into numbers. And so Sky's like, that bus is number 9 bus. And I said, you're right. And then he started noticing every time we would go out driving, he'd see number 9. And why? Because we would always go to that major street and that's the bus. And I was like,
yeah, we can take the bus.
And I'm like, that's the bus. If you ever need to get home, number 9.
Number 9, yeah.
I'm telling him, and Chris is like, he's 4. And I'm like, so? If he knows now that if you're ever lost, get on the number 9.
I still remember the, what was it, the 63 that went to our house.
63. Yeah. And so I'm a, you know, strong believer, because it gives you a sense of empowerment and a sense of, like, if I can get around the bus system,
yeah,
I can go anywhere. Right. And just know, but if my kids know from, well, their age of 4, if I need to get home, I get on the number 9, you know, and it's an important thing, because, you know, but also,
I always call Uber or I always call my mom or whatever. Like, yeah, you want your kids to understand how the world works without privileges.
Right. And then just, there's going to be times that I'm not going to be able to come get you and you won't have enough money. And no, I'm not paying for an Uber.
Yeah.
What are your choices?
You got a bus pass.
You got a bus pass. Yeah. Yep. Did I tell you? Oh, this is, we're so going away for this, but I think it goes to the kids in this family. So my entitled friend that was my richer friend from when I was younger, mm-hmm. did I tell you this ongoing argument I'm having with her right now?
No.
So I will see her and she'll be like, oh God, I didn't get a chance to eat because I work in this office and she works with her mom and her mom comes in late. And then she's like, and then I have to leave at 3:30 to pick up my kids. I'm like,
your kids are like 15.
They're 15.
They're 15. Put them on the bus.
And she's like, no, but I have to pick them up. And I'm like, why do you have to pick them up? And she's like,
and her kids don't have special needs, right?
No, they are totally capable, well-off white men. And she's like, well, I have to pick them up. And I'm like, no, you could tell them to meet you at the office, or you could tell them to take the bus home. And she's like, the bus. And I was like, they could take the bus home. From the private high school that they're going to your house in the West Hills, they could take the bus. And she's like, and I'm like, you could just, so don't tell me you have to stop working at this time because you have to go pick up your kids.
Actually, that's a really good lesson. With I just traveled with my friend Rano, and Rano at times has had a very, very privileged experience, and also like is good at being regular. And so like we're there traveling internationally, and she totally figured out the bus. And so like we went around all around Buenos Aires, like we saw some of the landmarks just like from the public bus, from the city bus, you know what I mean? And like even in the other town, like we weren't doing taxis or Ubers everywhere. We were like, and she like had already figured out the system. And like that's the thing, it's like you can't, I mean you can, but it's healthy to being like, let me see how people live here. How do people get around?
It's affordable. It's better for the environment. It's all of the things. But also, her kids are 15.
They're going to be your student.
Like, they're going to move.
They're going to be the kids that like the parents come to college with them to help them brush their teeth in the morning.
They're supposed to be in college in 3 years, and they don't know how to take the bus home.
They don't know how to get home.
Then she said, and this is where I got pissy at her, because she said, I worry about safety. And I was like, Catherine, they're 15. There are two of them. They're male and they have a cell phone. I was taking the city bus.
We had none of those things when I was taking the bus. I was 12.
I was taking the bus at 12. I was female. I was alone and I had no cell phone.
And it was the 90s.
I was doing the 80s.
Yeah.
And because I'm 103. But I was like, there's two of them and they have cell phones. They could take the bus home. And then she was like, well, my ex, their father picks them up from school. So she picks them up to school because she doesn't want to be the bad parent. So that's what she admitted. So like, and so I'm like, she thinks that.
No, so I think she's a good parent because you're teaching them to be in the world. Because if you expect to be chauffeured from here to there everywhere at 15,
right?
Man, at 15, I was definitely waiting 45 minutes for a bus to take a 45 minute bus to take a to have another 45 minute walk on the other side. And I know I'm uphilling both ways.
I know I totally are. I was like,
but it was uphill, but only one way. It was downhill the other way.
It was also not a 45 minute walk.
Well, if you took the bus to Lincoln and walked up the hill to our house. That was a 45 minute walk.
Okay. But I was just like, I love how that was 45 plus 45 plus 45 in that. And I was like,
probably didn't take 45 minutes to come, only if you took the 63. I'm combining experiences here.
To make it the worst.
45 minutes. Because I had options. I could wait for 45 minutes, or I could just walk for 45 minutes, or I could take a 45 minute bus. Like, those were probably my options, right?
Right.
And
right.
There was no cell phones. Let's bring it back to the book. No more sandwiches.
Okay. So, Roger and Philip, the two brothers, have suffered from this. Right.
They
Dad gave me money.
Rich kid syndrome.
Rich kid syndrome. Ooh, I like that. I'm sure we're not the only person who came up with that phrase. Anyway, Sophia gets the money. Everybody's pissed.
Right. So Sophia is the granddaughter?
Yes, granddaughter, but the oldest granddaughter.
Right. And her parents had passed on.
I thought her mom was the actress. Her mom is the actress.
Okay. No. So anyway. Oh yeah. So that's why it really does read as Knives Out.
Yeah. Her mom is. Where's the?
That is her mom. You're right. Her mom was the actress.
And Philip's her dad, right?
Okay. So her parents haven't passed at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
So basically,
yeah,
it's like Knives Out, where he was like, everyone else here sucks. You get the money.
Right. But Josephine. I can't remember how much we talked about her being like, I know something.
No, we right? didn't get into that. We didn't get into that yet. We didn't even get into that. So get into that. Introduce Josephine.
So Charles is engaged to Sophia, had met her before, and then Sophia's like, I can't marry you because drama. And he's like, okay, I'll fix it. Their relationship is actually very nice, considering it's 47. Not in a, like, I'm going to rescue
no,
because I'm a man.
To, I have a troubled past. My family's a hot mess, which we can all relate to.
Right. And so he's like, let me help. But she didn't be like damsel in distress, and he wasn't like male savior. Right. No. But then also he happens to be his dad works at Scotland Yard. And so his dad's like, you like this girl? Go investigate for me. Which is kind of fucked up, actually, when you think about it.
It is.
So he's there. And so he's trying to interview anybody. And Josephine, who's 12, so Sophia has two siblings, Eustace, which is an unfortunate name, who's 16, and disabled and kind of pissed about it. And that's why I went to the Knives Out Nazi kid, right? Because he's got anger issues. And then Josephine,
what
who's
was his
12.
Disability? I don't remember that. Eustace.
I can't remember now, but okay. He had a thing.
A war thing?
No, I thought it was a polio thing.
A developmental thing. Okay.
Not developmental, but like, you know.
Polio. Yeah.
Polio. Yeah. So, but he was pissed because he couldn't run like other 16-year-olds or whatever, which fair, you know, but he was pissed. And so it made him kind of a pissy, angry kid. And then Josephine, who's like, loves reading, super smart, loves detective stories. So she's like, I'm totally solving this murder. I'm going to do it. I know things. And so Charles is like, tell me the things you know. And she's like, no. And then like, she's in this one room, and then he finds the letters between the wife of the guy who was killed and the tutor of the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, aha, right? And so then they arrest the wife and the tutor, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what everybody who wanted to do it, all the other members of the family were like, oh God, can it be the outsiders and the gold digger?
Right, please let it be the gold digger and the tutor, and then that'll make us all not feel like it's one of us.
Right. Because there was a lot of throwing it around, and everybody was suspicious, and then they were pissed at Sophia because she got the money and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, it was polio that I just looked. Josephine is like, I know things because I'm super, I know all these things. And Charles is like, you should do this. And then they find Josephine knocked out.
Right. She's in like is it like a barn or an art? Like, it's like some extra, like, it's like, you know, an estate. So there's some random house or whatever, like a side house with whatever. And she was knocked out.
And she hit on the head by a marble thingamajig, marble doorstop, because rich people have marble doorstops. Rich people have doorstops. What the hell's? I don't think I have any doorstops at my house.
You might need to stop a door.
But are they marble?
No, fair enough.
But anyway,
good to have if you're moving.
But anyway, so she's been hit in the head, and they're like, "Oh my God, you're going to be killed! The killer wants to get you." And then they find the letters. I think it's like after that, Charles finds the letters and he's like, oh my God, and they arrest him.
Yeah, so there's letters between the age-appropriate tutor and the young wife.
Right. And I mean, age-appropriate to what?
What do you mean? I mean, her husband was 50 years older than her.
Oh, yeah, right.
So age-appropriate to her.
Right. So, and then everybody's like, whew, isn't that better? Everything's calm. Oh my God, that's over. and everybody's like super happy. And then the fucking nanny dies. And that's just rude. I mean, this goes back to the, like, you shouldn't kill the nice people.
It was not nice.
And so she had drank a cup of cocoa. Mm-hmm. But also it was like a cup of cocoa that maybe Josephine, the 12-year-old, was supposed to drink. And people are like, oh, they were trying to kill Josephine.
Yeah.
And right. Now everybody's like tense again. And everybody's afraid again, because even though, because if the nanny dies, when the people who they thought did it were locked up, then right, it wasn't because, them. Right,
the couple was in jail. These bad guys who did it can't be the killers because the nanny just died.
Right. And it, like a lot of her stories, there's this like kind of collectiveness of, can we find the bad guy and still feel good about ourselves, kind of collectiveness of the family. You know what I mean? Like, so there's, you know,
and anyway. So the whole thing seemed to be like the mood was going that, so these two people had been arrested, but then Josephine was hit in the head. And so was the murderer trying to kill her. And then the nanny died drinking cocoa, which was actually her cocoa, but she didn't finish it. And so the nanny drank it. So it's clearly pointing that whatever Josephine knows is pointing to the murderer.
Right. So then...
So as a perspective from the book, our hero author, our hero detective...
Charles
is like, Josephine, tell me what you know, because clearly you know who did it, and like you're gonna just keep getting trying, they're gonna attempted murder you again.
And she is coy and pulling the I'm smarter than you thing a lot, mm-hmm. right? And is like, I know, but I'm not gonna tell. And Charles was really worried for her life, right?
Yeah, because I mean, clearly they'd been like, they tried to knock her on her head with a marble doorstop, and they tried to poison her with the digitalis.
Right. We didn't mention that, but it was digitalis. So then I don't remember if we talked about who Edith was, because no, it was 4 months.
We haven't mentioned Edith yet at all.
Okay. So Aristide? Aristide? Mm-hmm.
Well, no, Aristide. You got it.
Aristide. So he had a wife, and that's how he had the two sons. And then she died. And then he married, but then before he married the young wife, his dead wife's sister came and Edith. Said,
Edith. So Aristide's first wife's spinster sister, which I am also, so, you know, no judgment.
You're not a spinster. You've been married like a bazillion times. No, I'm just kidding. Oh my God.
No, but as a childless woman in my 40s, can I be a spinster even if I'm a divorcee? Or do I have to choose one or the other?
Can I be a spinster? I thought spinster was always single, and so it was often code word for gay. So maybe you are a spinster because you're gay.
But the marriages kind of ruin it.
But I don't know, because I feel like that's what they used to call women who never did any relationships.
Right. That was definitely coded gay, because it was like, they just like those cats and they just have that best friend. So, okay. We'll decide. We'll put a survey out. Is Amanda a spinster or not?
Well, I think you get cats. Maybe it could depend on your mood. Are you a spinster or are you a divorcee? I mean, I think there's a whole thing.
I like the way there's an accent on one of the E's.
Yeah. And there was there's a story called The Gay Divorcee, right?
I don't know this.
Oh, yeah. You look it up. Gay divorcee.
Did someone write my life story?
No, it was the 1890s.
I want the credit. I want the royalties.
No, because that was back, it was the gay 90s when gay meant, you know, a woman who was divorced who was partying.
Oh, like another
me in 2014.
But you mean the 1890s, not the yeah.
The gay 90s were the 1890s, yes. So the gay divorcee was that one. But hey, you could be the gay divorcee. But anyway, I think you could choose whether you're a spinster or a divorcee, depending on your mood.
I mean, it's like spinster is one of those words that probably is like ready for reclaiming. Cause like no one's like, yeah, spinster squad. We ain't got no husbands. You know? No one is claiming spinster.
It's out there for the taking. If you want to be like,
that could be my blog or one of our listeners, all three of them, could be like, wait a minute, I'm going to be the spinster sister or something.
The pit spinster, yeah, like nothing rhymes. The spinster sister, yeah. The spinster.
Don't name it that.
The spinster. The no, yeah, stop. I got nothing. Nope. I can't.
Someone smarter than us will reclaim it and make some of its alliteration in a way that works.
Right. Okay. Fair.
So Edith and me are Spencer, maybe covered the same cloth. We don't have kids, and we're old, and that's what's important. And maybe gay.
and she helped take care of her. And she helped take care of her sister's kids. So you know.
Yeah, but I don't kill them, which is different. But if spoilers. What if one of your children turns out to be a psychopath? You know, maybe.
Spoiler! Hello.
We're on the way. We're right there. We're on the brim.
So there's this like
I'm logging
weird...
it up. You gotta like, you know, I'm Pippin.
Okay.
You're Jordan.
So she's like,
do it.
There's this weird moment where Edith is like, I'm gonna take Josephine for an ice cream soda. And then she hugs and gives kiss Sophia, the woman who's engaged to Charles and had inherited all the money. She gives her a hug and a kiss and like says like I love you before
very
they go get ice cream
for going for an ice cream.
And then they don't come back for a while and people are like, that's weird, they didn't come back. And then the car went over a cliff. And Charles is like, hey, I think I remember her carrying some letters as she was about to leave. And so one is a letter for Chief Inspector that was like doing the main part of the case, not Charles's dad, but like Charles's dad and boss.
Inspector, yeah.
And then in that letter, it says that she took responsibility for the death of Aristide and the nanny. Nanny has
that
a name.
Edith did.
The woman who just drove off a cliff with Josephine. But then you're like, oh, that's wrong. You're like, oh, shit. She took a 12-year-old. And also she says in this letter, oh, by the way, I'm also dying. Which
right.
was
I have end-stage cancer, so it's cool.
Right. But you're like, you just took the 12-year-old, you bitch.
Right. You
but
just
then,
like, went off a cliff with a 12-year-old.
But then Sophia and Charles.
Janet is the nanny who died.
Who?
Janet Rowe. You said Janet. She has a name. You were like, say her name. You were all like Fight Club. You were like,
right.
His name is Robert something.
But yeah. Then Janet. Sophie. So Janet is the nanny's name. Yeah. But then Sophie and Charles figure out at the exact same time. Because they read this letter from Edith about how she's like, I did it and I'm dying. And they're like, what the hell? That doesn't make any sense. She has no motive at all to kill her brother-in-law. None. There's no money motive. There's no like love motive. There's no motive at all. It doesn't make any sense. And why would she also kill Josephine? And then Sophie and Charles actually both figure it out before they read the second letter. And they open the second letter, and the second letter has a letter from Edith. And it's got Josephine's diary.
Right.
And Josephine's diary starts out with "Today I Killed Grandfather."
Oof.
And so,
of course, this is not a reread. Who's going to reread a story about a 12-year-old who's
because blind? He said he wouldn't pay for ballet lessons.
Yeah, and it was this whole thing. I remember that, like, and it was well done as a mystery, bringing it back to being a book review pod. In that, they kind of dropped.
We're doing?
I think so.
I forgot.
It's been 4 months, so we're bad at this. So yeah, I remember like they kept dropping in. There was something about like grandfather was like she needs to go to boarding school or she needs to go to ballet lessons. Like grandfather was pushing the parents to make a decision, which was probably the right decision. Like we were just talking about bringing it full circle back to our personal lives.
Boundaries.
Sometimes what's good for the kid is not what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And so it had to do with ballet lessons or the school they were going to or something. It was like some trivial, but not trivial, but like in the kid's life, it's the biggest thing in the world. But to the adult, it's like this school or that school or whatever. But the grandfather was making a big influence on something around that about going to ballet or going to whatever. And it was sort of like in her psychopathic 12-year-old brain, it was like, okay, well, grandfather's the problem, kill grandfather.
Right. And then she got all this attention because everybody's like, oh, are you okay? You know things, da da da. But then when they, and so she
and
knew where those letters
were. It was interesting because the book also dropped a cookie crumb about that because it was sort of, I remember early on they were kind of saying like, it's interesting because sometimes someone wants to plan that, like, solve the crime along with you, and sometimes they're the murderer, but you don't think it's going to be the kid.
Right.
But literally the book was like, the book dropped the clue, was like, the person who's most invested in, like, going along with this journey, sometimes, with the investigation, sometimes is a killer. But you're like, it's not going to be the 12-year-old kid. They're like, we're thinking of, who's the kid from Tommy and Tumpets? So it was just like, I'm a part of this detective thing. Or the kid from...
The beautiful woman. The beautiful woman who tried to...
In Freddie Fisher, there's like the kid who wants to be a detective. Like there's often a kid who's like, I'm into this because this detective stuff is cool.
Right.
From that like kid being like, detective shit is cool, but like it actually is the murderer being like watching you up close solving it in front of their face. And then... Right. Nanny had figured it out.
Well, and so Nanny was like, she's got to go. Like, she needs to go to Switzerland to boarding school. So she killed Nanny. But the marble thing is what's super fucked up.
Oh, yeah.
Is she had put the marble on a door and then tried to, like, swing the door
to
hit
it. Yeah, she did, like, a whole MacGyver, like, mousetrap. Multiple springs and pulleys. Like, you should have been an engineer. Like, you're a psychopath. You're good at physics.
Right.
Just be an engineer. Don't kill people.
Ouch. I'm married to an engineer, but yes. But like, right.
You know, you think about things scientifically. You're like, oh, okay, this, you know, this much force, it goes up there and the ball flies up.
Right. Because she tried to get the marble to fall off of a door jamb. She had
several failed trials to get it to like hit her in the head.
And it could have killed her. You dumbass. Like
She took the risk to make it look like she got knocked out by the potential killer. And then Nanny, I think, either read the diary, maybe Nanny read the diary, or Nanny just like saw a look in her eye and they exchanged glances and she was like, Nanny knows. And so she knew that Nanny always drank her leftover hot chocolate or whatever. So she poisoned her own hot chocolate and didn't drink it, knowing that Nanny would drink it, and then Nanny died.
Right. I mean, it's super fucked up. Like, and then...
Deb.
Right? You know? Right?
We love our nannies.
Right. So, you know, so she... So she kills the nanny, and then she talked about killing her mom because her mom was like also thinking we should send her to boarding school.
Yeah, I think the grandfather thing was about boarding school and maybe slash ballet. But yeah, it was like all of that. She was like, okay, let me just keep killing people until I get what I want.
And then, but then her aunt was like, oh, found the diary. It was like, okay, we're going for ice cream sodas, and like killed herself and her niece. And so Charles and Sophia are like, well, now what do we do? Like, what?
Right.
You know, because like...
Right. Edith left a tidy solution for the police. But then Charles and...
Sophia.
Sophia now have a very dark secret on their hands. Not dark. That's colonial language. Have a very terrible, troubling secret on their hands. And... then they're like, okay, bye. I don't know. How's it end? I don't remember.
Well, they do. They do get married. I mean, they do say, like, we can be together. And Sophia's like.
And then they said, let's use a donor egg. Just in case.
Right?
Just in case. Because your family.
This is fucking Sophia's sister. Right? You know? And then they talk about, like.
Wait, isn't that her niece?
No, it's her sister. It was her younger sister.
Oh, that's fucked up.
Right.
Yeah, I would say, let's use a donor egg, baby. Like, let's just... genetic counseling is still new. We don't know how to test for a lot of stuff. Let's just see...
It's 1947. There's no donor eggs.
Okay, well, we can adopt somebody. There's orphanages. It's Annie times.
Right, it is Annie time. So, like,
orphanages. They could get someone out of that hard knock life.
Definitely, yeah. Who would probably be less psychotic than this family? But if this goes back to the
nature versus nurture. And I feel like that's Agatha Christie influencing me to say that, like, mental illness is genetic. And, you know, it's multifaceted.
Right, because...
it's both nature and nurture. But still, there's Annies out there. Unknown
right.
After life.
Back in 47 there was.
Yeah.
Not now.
Now people are fighting over babies. I have oh my gosh, I have the terrible, I haven't told you these terrible stories. Maybe I have.
You have.
These friends that are trying to adopt and like people are boxing over babies. You can't get a baby. So
well, okay.
Kids can be killers, and if your kid is a killer, then the aunt has to kill him. And so that's my job. So if either of your child is a psychopath, which is not true because I know your children, they're lovely, and they're not psychopathic. But if in an alternate universe where you had psychopath kids, it'd be my, according to Agatha Christie, it's my job to kill your kid who's a killer.
Well, also, have we learned that...
In this story, they would have killed mom, because that's, or maybe one of Chris's parents. Like,
right.
Who would they have killed?
Well, they would have killed the grandparent that had the most control over them, which probably would be mom.
Rude. That's the I'm driving them off the cliff. We're going together.
But also, like, or perhaps prior to 12, someone has a consequence or a boundary.
Bringing it back to your student teacher, this is... When it comes to your kids and they're having a moment and they're screaming, you say, you know what? I'm going to just hold this moment and say, no, you can't have the cookie because I don't want you to kill your grandmother when you're 12.
Right. Or
this is why we say no to the 18-month-old who's having a meltdown. Or when you're too tired, you have, that's what the Amanda Spinster divorcee
yes.
parent is for. I am the village. I am here for when your parents are sick of you and they're ready to give in. I say, come over, because I'll hold the line. And I remember saying that to my god nibbling. I have a non-binary nibbling. My god nibbling, who was having a tantrum, and I said, your mother doesn't have time, but I do. You fall out, do all the things. And whatever boundary I had said, it was a very mild boundary. And they were going through all of their strategies. And I was like, go ahead, do all the strategies. I have time. your mother is tired and she has to go to work, but I'm here and I have, this is Saturday and I have all day. And that's what you need sometimes is the village. And I didn't save them from themselves, but I entertained myself. And eventually they got it together. We went to the movie or whatever we were going to do.
Right. I mean, because if holding the boundary, I mean, the thing about me is that, and this is the thing, is that some of the boundaries are real. Like, they're not just boundaries because they're boundaries because I do have to be at work.
Right.
And unlike my student teacher, I'd like to be at work on time. And I've already told my bosses that I have to drop my kids at 8:30, but that doesn't mean I get to show up at 9. So when my daughter is refusing to sit on the potty, and then I have to,
you
literally...
are now bribing her for bathroom reasons. So that she won't kill someone one day. And it's going to be, you're going to save mom's life. There it is.
But also that day when she was like, I buckled Sky in and I come back and she hasn't even sat on the potty. I picked her up and pulled down her pants and sat her down. And that pissed her off so much. Right.
I don't think we said any of this on the podcast. I was like referring back to it, but it didn't happen on the pod. We were saying that before in the catch up time because we never talk. I don't see you. You don't call. I'm just joking.
Oh, thank
you. That was a joke. That was just a reflex. Like we don't.
Okay. I know we're going to finish up, but I just have to say that our dad has come up a couple times with my kids in the last couple of days.
Really?
So, because Annika called me Worsha.
Oh.
And I said, your grandmother, Mormor, and grandpa used to call me Portia Worsha.
Oh.
And then Annika said, and it was interesting because I didn't mention.
Remind the listeners, how old were they when he passed?
They were two.
Okay. He passed in September, yes, so they were like 2.5.
Yeah, not quite 2.5. So it's been over two years.
Yeah.
So I said, they used to call me Portia Worsha. And then Annika said, there was a little bit, and then she goes, where do you go when you die?
Wow.
Right? And I was like,
is there a Life Give episode on this? Because I just heard the one where they told you how to talk to your kids about sex. But that's
and I
harder.
Said, you know, I don't know because I'm not religious. So I don't have a, and I'm like, I don't know. And she goes, huh. And then she says, I guess we'll find out when we die.
Oh, that's funny.
And I was like, yeah, I guess so. You know, and she was pretty calm about it. And
yeah,
then,
because I know that you said before that like Skylar had spiraled into like worrying about death for a while.
Yeah, and he can still go there because the other thing happened tonight. This was tonight. We were watching Colorado versus Oregon women's basketball college. Right, Colorado's really good, so you know we were watching and so. Annika and Chris, who went to Colorado, were like, go Colorado. And then Sky says in this almost, you know, I'm rooting for the Ducks. And it was so cute. And then they were kind of playing back and forth, you know, Chris and Skylar like, well, I'm rooting for the Buffaloes back and forth. And then Sky goes, go Ducks. And I said, oh, your grandfather would be really happy to hear you say that.
Go Ducks.
And Sky goes, yeah, but he can't hear me say that because he died. And wow. I said, yeah, he did. And he said, yeah, I don't want to die. You know, and he starts to do that. And I said, yeah, nobody wants to. You know, so we had a little conversation tonight, which we haven't had in a while.
Yeah. What but brought it on for him before? Was it around dad dying or was it?
No, I told you it was because he read a book about a bear losing his tooth. And then they asked about grown-up teeth, and they said, how long do you get grown-up teeth? And then Chris said, for the rest of your life. And then they said, when's that? And he said, until you die. And they were like, I'm gonna die?
No.
But it all started because the fucking, like, you're gonna lose your teeth.
Oh my God.
Right? It wasn't because their grandfather died. It was because of the book about loose teeth.
But so, Dad, they were really young when Dad died, so
yeah.
Oh, so anyway, man. Woof, man. You know, see, this is where I like being the spinster, because I'll take your kids. You and Chris can go on a parent, you know, vacation, and I'll come over and I'll watch the kids for a week. We'll have a good time, and they'll ask big questions, and I'll say, you know, when your parents get back, you should ask that.
Right. Well, I actually loved it, because she goes, where do we go? And I'm like, you know?
No, yeah, Veronica, but then Skylar's going to spiral, and I'm going to be like, I don't know, Skylar, and we're both going to be, like, rocking and shaking and crying, and you're going to have to come back. It's bad.
Well, it was sweet. I got a little verklempt, you know, because I said, you know, I get sad because I miss him, and I used to really love, because if he were alive, we might have been watching this game at his house, you know. Yeah. But the kids were really great about it, and they kind of remembered, you know, it was kind of cool.
Yeah. Oh, that is really cool.
So anyway, my kids are not psycho killers. I'm not clapping. Why do I want to clap so much today?
I don't know. I haven't had to give you that feedback about clapping, but like, you've become a clap while talking person, which is
right
for you.
Because I wanted to do it again, like multiple
Twitter
times.
Too much? Have you been? Because I feel like on Twitter, everything is like separated by a clap in between every word.
Oh, no. Yeah, I don't know why I want to clap. But anyway, so my point is that I'm hoping that my children do not decide that if someone wants to do something they don't want them to do, they should kill them.
And you're going to make them get jobs and that they hate, so they learn a work ethic and take the bus. Good night.
Well, they can. I liked my first jobs, but I did learn that you show the fuck on time.
Yeah, that's a big part of jobs.
Especially if you're the teacher. Right?
Yeah, but all jobs like when you come.
Right.
You're supposed to come. Like, but that's like, just a basic rule of jobs. And I agree that, like, it's weirder when your teacher is late. But, like, that's why I feel like that's why you have the jobs when you're younger, when you get yelled at for being late. And you're like, oh, I'm supposed to come on time. Learn that lesson. Check.
Right.
I'm 14. Check.
Right? Can you imagine showing up to a babysitting job without not on time or any job?
Any job.
But also, if you're a manager or a teacher, like, people are expecting you to be the responsible one. You are the... Anyway. So, this book...
It's good, but... Oh, yeah. Portion scale. Go.
5.
It's good, but mystery. Not enjoyable.
Right. I mean, because... Everyone's nice. The people who died were nice. Everyone's nice, except for the two creepy kids.
You're like, oh fuck, is that the solution? Like, when you start to see it coming as a reader, you're like, oh no, not that. And then it is that, and it's a brilliant solution. Like, it's kind of like, you know, she's done everything else. She's done, like, the narrator is the killer, and then whatever. Like, now the baby's the killer. Ah. So it's a
smart
solution.
But it makes you feel creepy.
Yeah, because you never wanted to be a 12-year-old who killed 2 people and then got killed by her own aunt.
Spencer. Yeah, Spencer, you had to throw that in. You just had to be like, also Spencer, in case you were wondering.
Spencer aunt.
But yeah, the whole thing is creepy and sad because she had parents who loved her because Sophia had the same parents. And Sophia criticized her mom for being...
Right,
her mother
had issues and was kind of narcissistic in the acting and stuff, but like...
And then the dad was pissed because his brother was the favorite of his dad, which we all have, you know, but does that make the kid psychotic? you know?
It is scary. And that's why I was saying the whole thing about genetic counseling, because you're like, okay, I don't see enough here to make you killy, especially with your sister being so kind. Although, right. People can have, like we've talked about, you and I had very different experiences just 5 years apart. And they had clearly had a big age difference, because What's-Her-Face is a grown woman.
Right. But the 60...
still. Like, and then there has to be a little bit of genetic component going into this.
And they didn't have it be the 16-year-old kid with polio who had anger issues.
And which I'm glad, because I'm angry. I have anger issues about people with disabilities always being targeted for things like this sometimes. In those
true, cases. But he would have at least had a reason, right? He was angry.
And we have a trope, at least in the modern day, because of gun violence, a trope of an angry 16-year-old. A trope of a, you know, murdery 12-year-old. We don't have that.
Right. 12-year-olds really get into Taylor Swift and do, are melodramatic, but they don't kill people, right? Like, that's the weird thing. Also, the way she was described was not as a tween. She was described as a kid. Right. Yeah,
100%.
Because when I was 12, I was tweeny and developing and into boys.
We're going to end this soon because it's the end of the night, but I have to tell you something. You're probably the only person who would understand this joke. So I've spiraled into dark places of reality TV. Don't judge me. Shut up. I see your face.
I'm not judging. Anyways, I didn't say a word.
I have a coworker friend, work wife, who has taken me to some places, and I may have watched a Vanderpump Rules or two. Shut up. Anyway, related to that, I've listened to a person podcast whose name is Danny Pellegrino. Anyway, that's not the point. The point is, I was listening to one of his podcasts, and he was telling a sidebar but he's like you and I, but he's in one person. So he's like having a conversation back and forth and sidebarring, but it's just one guy.
Oh, wow.
But anyways, he was talking about how he was asking his sister what his niece was into for her birthday. And she was like, oh, Bobby Brown. So he was like, okay. And he starts looking at Barbie Brown stuff. And he's like, look at Bobby Brown's website. And he's like, I guess I can get her a t-shirt. I can't even get through it. It's like my prerogative or like new dish merch. Anyways, the sister met Millie Bobby Brown, who's like the star of
Stranger Things,
who has like facial care. But right. Like, he was like, why does my 10-year-old niece need facial care? And he got turned into that. But like him, like, she killed this 10-year-old kid.
Went like, to the 80s?
He's like, oh, Bobby Brown. Okay. Well, like, sure. Some new edition merch. And it felt so niche to me because I was like, I understand that you were like, why am I getting my prerogative t-shirt? And I just died. And I was literally walking down the sidewalk and like laugh crying down the sidewalk. And I was like, people are going to arrest me.
Oh, anyway, God.
Yeah, let's end the podcast. Now that we've advertised for another podcast, which is Danny Pellegrino, which is hilarious.
You also mentioned Life Kit, so we've advertised for several podcasts that because random.
Yeah, they don't sponsor us yet, but one day we're gonna like figure out that whole thing. There's a form you gotta fill out. We haven't filled out the form.
We probably need to record more often than every 4 months in order to do that.
How often do you put out your podcast? Either between 2 times a week and every 4 months.
Oh, God. Okay.
Depends on how much COVID there is outside.
Okay. But my point is, this book, mostly depressing. So that's why we didn't talk about it that much.
Where's your stars?
So I thought it was a 5 because it was kind of depressing. And I didn't like it. I mean, I liked it. It was interesting and a surprise solution, but it wasn't like, yay. It was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, there's definitely sort of like a when the surprise solution, there's like Agatha Christie could Agatha Christie too far, and I think she did here, where it's like the surprise is like it was the child, like the infant did it, and you're like, okay, that was a surprise, but like it's gross.
It's gross. So it's just sad. You know,
and
but
I don't
also
really feel like it's ripped from the headlines. Like I don't really know about a 12-year-old murderer and I don't want to.
Yeah, because mostly when you hear about kids who commit those kinds of things, they didn't really understand what they were doing.
Right, yeah. Right. Before puberty, it's always like I pulled the trigger and it was a mistake. And then yeah, and there's like now, especially nowadays in gun times, it's like teenagers with big feels.
Right.
There aren't stories except for like, what's that story where Macaulay Culkin was so scary?
I don't know. I didn't see it.
It was like not that long after Home Alone, and then he played a bad guy who was killing everybody, but he was a child and it was very scary. I think it was called The Good Son. I'm looking it up.
Okay. Not that long after Home Alone, he danced in the Nutcracker for the New York
City
Ballet.
Yeah, The Good Son. It was a horror mystery, and Macaulay Culkin was like a killy baby, and it was very scary. But that was the thing. Like, we don't like that. I don't feel like that's ripped from the headlines. I feel like that's only like a horror story that we tell ourselves.
Right, yeah, because I think if people just kind of imagine it, because it doesn't happen very often.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, so I mean, it was more just like, oh, that's just depressing.
Like, it was clever, like, you know, it was the narrator, it was the whatever, it was the coroner did it, but like, no, it was like, oh, it was the baby. Oh, I don't like that.
Yeah, and... Yeah, so then all of the usual motives that Agatha Christie likes to do get thrown out because her motives were childish.
Yeah.
So it was okay. So I don't like it. I didn't reread it until we did it for this. It was okay. But that's why I spent most of this time either talking about other things or avoiding it for 4 months. But also our lives were busy.
Also lives are busy because we're not in COVID. Okay.
So,
well, but this was lovely. What's next week, Portia?
We are going to
report. By next week, I mean less than 4 months.
Taken at the Flood.
That's the next one. I don't remember that one. Taken at the Flood?
Yeah, Taken at the Flood. Yeah, okay. That's the next one.
Okay,
published the same year. Published the same year as Crooked House.
All right, looking forward to it. Well, thank you everyone for your patience. And by everyone, I mean all 4 people who are still listening to us.
Yeah.
Hey, Trey, because I know you're one of them.
Yeah, and we're going to publish this eventually.
Yeah, when Amanda has time to edit. While she's jet setting.
So, while you're jet setting, you're editing. All right, well, thank you everybody. And thank you for listening to Praropod.
Good night. Praropod.
Thank you.